people. That's because I moved location, but we are back. I'm Tom over on this end of the line. That's Mike over on that end. We want to talk.
How's it going, everybody?
Hey, Brian. I'm Lance Storm, and I go to your weddings.
I know, right?
Yeah.
We're back.
Oh, go ahead. What'd you say, dude?
No, I said we're back. We took a break, but yeah. Now we're back, so ready to talk the wrestling for a little while.
Showing how terrible of a listener I am. Yeah, we took a week off because I moved, and now I'm here. And I hope it don't sound too terrible because I don't have my computer hooked up to a router. But it seems to be going so far so good. But we're going to talk just hodgepodge of stuff we've been watching. We don't really have a set format, so to speak. But I know for a fact we want to start off. Young Michael here took a trek to the new Alhambra Arena last night.
And actually, it was in Reading.
It was in Reading?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the attention I pay. So he took a trek to Reading, or
Reading, Pennsylvania. It's about a half hour outside, if anyone's not familiar with the state of Philadelphia, or not the state of Philadelphia, the state of Pennsylvania. Reading is about like a half hour outside of Philly, so not too far away.
My question before we start is, who are the people of Reading to decide that we cannot pronounce that town's name as Reading?
Reading, I know, right? It's always been Reading, I guess, so one of those things. Read and Red.
They probably drank their tea with their pinky stuffed up in the air. But besides the point.
Actually, Reading, I was going to say a little Reading trivia before we start. Reading used to be like a really dangerous area, really dangerous city, but now I think it kind of cleaned itself up a little more. So I don't go to it too often, but, Reading is a town. If you've ever been in Reading, you know what I'm talking about. It's certainly a town to talk about if you know it. So.
But I think it's because the Young Lions have tamed the area. The Young Lions came to town last night, and they sure had a bunch of battles here that Mike saw, and he wants to comment on it this time. So go ahead with the third night of the Young Lions Cup number 8.
Yes, it was Young Lions Cup number 8. I wasn't at the first two Young Lions Cups, so I'm kind of just going to wait for those to come out on DVD, I guess. Just real quick, I mean, I'm not really going to run down everything that happened, but Frightmare won on the first night, and Lince Dorado ended up winning the second night. How the Young Lions Cup is, how it's basically set up is there's 6 singles matches, and then in those singles matches, they go to a 6-way, and then from there, it's an elimination 6-way, and whoever wins that goes to the third night in the main event, and they have a singles match for the Young Lions Cup. And I kind of like that setup because I think it's kind of cool how you kind of prove your worth. You kind of prove that you want to be, can win the cup, a singles match to qualify in a way. It's like the quarterfinal, and then like the big semifinal is just like, the 6-way, and you obviously have to survive that. So I heard both nights were really good. I was talking to a few people before the show. I heard Green Ant and Tozawa was really good. I know Adam Cole and Kyle O'Reilly. I mean, how could that match not be awesome? And I heard it was really good. So I heard it was a fun show. And there's actually a few guys, Tom, that you might know maybe from your neck of the woods. My buddy Tom that I was at the show with was actually familiar with a couple of them that I wasn't. So we'll get to that in a minute. But I guess we'll start out with Hollow Wicked and Tozawa started the show. And I thought really maybe one of the best sub-10-minute matches in Chikara all year so far. Tozawa has improved so much. I think Tozawa's, he's going to be in the States for, I don't know if he's going to be in there for a few more weeks. I know he's been here since that Dragon Gate show back in July, I believe. I don't know where he's staying. I don't know what he's doing around here, if he's training wherever, but I kind of like that. It's like his, like how Shingo did it a few years ago. It's like his little trip to America and fight at all the, Legion halls around the Northeast, but he had a really good match with Hollow Wicked. Hollow Wicked beat him. Obviously, I guess you got to put the Chikara guy over, but it was a really good match. It's nice to see Tozawa, I guess fighting Hollow Wicked and stuff like that. Cause they had like little bit of an interaction back on the July Dragon Gate show. And I thought it was just a really interesting matchup when I heard about it Sunday morning, I guess they announced it. So It was pretty good.
Yeah, sounds like it. Yeah, the Hotazawa thing. It's weird that like it hasn't leaked out where he's staying because where's he just he's working just Chikara and PWG, right?
Yeah, he did Chikara PWG. I know he did. I could have sworn he did another Fed, but maybe I'm wrong. I probably am. Maybe that's it. Those are the only two actually. Yeah, because he wouldn't have done Dragon Gate, and Evolve isn't until September. So like, what was he doing over here?
I have no earthly idea.
Or, because it wasn't like he went to, back to Japan. I think he stayed here from the Dragon Gate show. I mean, I don't know. I could very well be wrong, so I don't want to, you know, sound like I know what I'm talking about. But I'm pretty sure that's what happened. But maybe I'm wrong. But regardless, I think, you know, hopefully it doesn't well. I think Tozawa's been really good. Tozawa's a guy, he was one of the Dragon Gate guys I wasn't too familiar with maybe toward the start of this year. You know, yeah, obviously you have your Yoshinos and your Naruki Dois and all that. Tozawa's a guy, I guess, you know, coming up. And, you know, he's definitely a guy I've enjoyed a lot, and I look forward to seeing him, you know, succeed in the future. I think it's kind of cool that he's getting this, you know, this little start here in the U.S. Indies to kind of maybe make a name for himself to us Americans, you know, and then sooner or later, I think the guy's going to break out. He's really just a really talented guy, really exciting guy. He's a really good guy to see live. I think when you see him live and he's screaming and he's just the way he interacts, he's a lot of fun. I think he's, you know, he's definitely going to be something someday.
Yeah, that's a lot of the Dragon Gate guys, and to a lesser extent, a lot of Japanese guys, where they have this charisma. And I'm not saying all Japanese guys do, but the first big example of that, like besides Muda, was Tajiri, where
yeah,
he would just have
exactly,
to make goofy faces, and yeah, he had this energy about him that everyone caught on.
Yeah. When did you start watching wrestling? Because you bringing up Muda, it reminds me, like, well, Muda was like around like 89, whatever, and that's like, I was like 4 years old, 5 years old when I really first started watching wrestling, and like there was something always about Muda that really always got me, and maybe, you know, it was always the mist, obviously, maybe it was like the painted face too, but he had something to him, and I think maybe when Tajiri came, you know, later in 98 in ECW, if you remember that he had a match with Anifaz del Norte, I think at the arena, it was like right before they had like a Guilty as Charged match with him and Super Crazy, I know like they would have him, you know, in a squash match, and like I think he got over pretty much in 5 minutes to that ECW arena crowd, which is, you know, no small task, you know what I mean?
Muda's the first Japanese guy I ever saw. I didn't start watching until like mid 1990, I think.
Yeah,
but the first match I remember watching is a British Bulldog squash match in WWF Superstars when he came back with like the dreads or the braids or whatever.
Oh yeah, yeah.
So yeah, it's around that time. But I do remember loving Muda when I was like in preschool.
Yeah, yeah, and that's hopefully how Tozawa is gonna get today. I know there was like a lot of kids in the audience and stuff like that, and you know, they were really getting over. Like he does like this, come on baby, and he like jumps like off the top rope and he'll do the headbutt and he'll miss and then he'll just go for it again. I think he's done that a couple times in PWG, so people kind of know what I'm talking about. And you know, he does, like, all these, like, little things, too. Like, just, like, these facial expressions. Like, I'm telling you, like, facial expressions shouldn't be, like, so hard where, you know, like, people, like, it's hard to notice your facial expressions. Like, I think that's, like, a really big part of, you know, a wrestling match. And obviously, with these guys, you know, half of them wearing masks, I mean, a lot of them can't do it. But, you know, seeing Tozawa go out there and wrestle Hollow Wicked, it was definitely refreshing. It was definitely kind of, like, a change of pace. So, it was something pretty interesting.
Yeah, and I mean, with the mask, you just got to work bigger, but but that's beside the point. Speaking of guys with painted faces, since we talked about Muda, second match, Mike Seidel, the younger brother of Evan Bourne, that should just be his nickname, since every time you hear
Mike,
his name.
Mike, brother of Evan Bourne Seidel.
Exactly, that should be his nickname, since every time you hear the guy's name. But anyway, he's
faced. It really is. Yeah, I was going to say, and this is I was going to transition to painted faces to Oberyn here, who I believe that's how you say his name, Oberyn. I don't know. I thought I heard Loudon say his name, or not Loudon. What the hell is his name this week? Gavin.
Gavin Loudspeaker.
Yeah, I was going to say Gavin Loudon. Whatever he is, I think he does a good job, and we'll talk about him in a couple minutes. But, Oberyn, he beat Mike Seidel about 9 minutes with a flying DDT. He does like a stands on the top rope, does a DDT. Oberyn's a guy kind of built like a middleweight, maybe like a light heavyweight kind of wrestler. He's not your usual, you know, flippy guy you might see a lot, but he's something. He definitely has like a look to him, and I don't really know how to exactly describe it, but like he has like this muscle look. I don't want to say it's like JT Storm circa Halloween Havoc 1990, but he's definitely like this muscle looking guy. Obviously has the painted face, so that reminded me of Sting a little bit, you know what I mean, just because I kind of dig that, like long hair. He was, like, smiling. He had, like, this, like, you know, obviously I think he's a Rudo because he was doing a lot of evil things. But he seemed like a guy I guess they were trying to heavily push, because I think on night two they had him go to the finals. I think they had him pin Adam Cole, the Adam Pin, with Kitayano as well. So it was interesting. I guess they got something. I think he might be a student too, because like they didn't announce that he was from, you know, AIW, or he's from, you know, California somewhere or something like that. I think they announced that he was unknown. So that kind of like makes me believe that I think he's going to be a player in Chikara now. So that's going to be interesting to see where he goes.
Yeah, and just curious, because I know when I've seen Mike Seidel before, not been good. It's not been pretty.
Rock and roll Mike Seidel. I don't know if he just kind of adapted that gimmick, but he's now he's not like... And my buddy Tom was commenting on this too. He doesn't wrestle like how you used to remember Mike Seidel. He's kind of a little different. I think he doesn't kind of go for those flippy things all the time, or try to be like Matt Seidel Jr., you know what I mean? Or Mike Seidel, I guess, you know, whatever. But like, he just tries to be a little different. And I thought he was pretty entertaining. I think he's improved a little bit. I mean, you know how old he is by any chance?
He's older than Evan. Right. He's the older brother of the two.
Oh, wow. I didn't even...
Yeah.
That's funny about it.
Yeah. And also, I hope he gets to cut a promo on one of these DVDs, one of those backstage segments. Because have you ever seen, like, those... that one promotion from Iowa, I forget their name. The one with the dude that always posts that crap on the Death Valley Driver board.
Oh, hybrid wrestling?
No, not hybrid. The other...
Beyond Wrestling.
They have, like, a 40-minute YouTube show every week. They're in Iowa. Beyond Wrestling's in Ohio. I forget their name. But this dude works for them, and he cuts... Mike Seidel cuts promos, like, on every one of their shows, it seems, or every one of those deals, it seems like. He cuts promos like Crispin Glover, which is the weirdest like influence for promos ever, but it's fascinating, let's just say that. Whereas his brother can't really talk, can't really enunciate too much, doesn't have a lot of verbal charisma, so to speak.
Yeah.
His brother's more eccentric, let's just say that. And if he can get a grasp on that, I think he has something going. I'm glad to see he's not just trying to do crappy versions of Matt's moves.
Yeah, you know, he's not trying to do like the shooting star. He's not trying to do this. He's his own guy, and I appreciate that, and I respect it. I'm glad that he's doing that, because I think if he was just, you know, Matt Seidel back in the Indies, I think it's, you know, don't get me wrong, Matt Seidel is fucking awesome. You know what I mean? But be yourself. You know, so I'm glad that he's at least himself. So, and speaking of people that are themselves, Green Ant, unfortunately. Came on the losing end.
He is
not himself right now. He is actually detached from himself, because I think he broke his arm.
I thought he broke his arm. I didn't think it came off. That'd be horrible.
Yeah.
If the arm came off.
I know. I'm just being a fool here. But yeah, he had a match with Yano. Am I saying that right? Yano. Alan,
I
apologize if I apologize.
I'm
just going to say Yano, and then if I'm wrong, I'm wrong. Whatever. Our good buddy Leonard Chikarison, well, I'm sure knows how the correctly pronunciation of that name. So we'll find out when we get the DVD. But yeah, he had a match, and it was like a really like MMA style match. Actually, it was mainly MMA style. I don't think they really didn't try to do anything else besides, you know, submission moves and try to counter moves and stuff like that. And it was different, and I enjoyed it. And it wasn't like, I guess in a way it was kind of like that WXW promotion where they tried to do like an MMA hybrid type
ambition.
Stuff. Yeah, I didn't pick that DVD up at the Smart Mark table, and I wanted to. So I forgot to for whatever reason. I'll have to get it next time. But this match was really good. I thought Green Ant was, I guess he kind of came out like with Soldier Ant and Fire Ant, like kind of like, you know, how the UFC guys come out like wearing like the shirts and stuff like that, and like, you know, they'll have the referee outside the ring pat them down, and then they, you know, take the shirt off and give everybody a hug and stuff like that, and then go in. Prepare for battle. So it was, I thought that was a cool little touch, you know, but it, you know, Green Ant definitely held his own. And, you know, I think I've said it before, and I've said it again, I'm kind of jumping around here. I'll talk about the match in a minute, but Green Ant has been fantastic this year, and fantastic for him. Maybe, you know, not maybe fantastic in terms of, you know, he's the next, you know, Kobashi or whatever like that. But, you know, for a rookie, that's really just, as far as I know, is not, you know, another wrestler. He's a rookie. He's a student. He's new. I think he's been excellent this year, and this match was definitely, you know, great. Before it kind of obviously had a little botched finish toward the end, but you know, there was an injury, so I guess as much as you want to fault everyone for that, I mean, it's when there's an injury, it's best just to end the match and just get it over with and get the guy help. So You know, it's whatever.
And, yeah, that's really a shame for the guy. But I'm glad to see it's 6 to 12 weeks as opposed to the original 6 to 12 months.
Yeah, like, thankfully, like, I was thinking when I heard 6 to 12 months, I think someone had mentioned that on the message board. I thought, oh, that's terrible because basically 12 months, you know, it'll be until, you know, next September, basically, you know, next August. So you figure if he's out for a year, that'd just be the worst for everybody. But I'm glad to hear he'll be okay, you know, and he'll probably be back, I guess, for the finale, if not, you know, start of the 2011 season. And another guy I'm hoping will be back, hopefully before the finale, is Mr. Greg Iron. And
who is also handicapped.
Yeah, I was going to say, this is what my buddy Tom, shout out to my buddy Tom, not you, Tom, my other buddy Tom. I guess he knew him from Pro Wrestling Ohio, so I'd really like to know more about him. What happened? He basically has half of a hand. I know he can't work, he can't use that hand, but I admire the hell out of the guy.
I know, like, I haven't seen the entire feud build up, but I know a lot of it's out on YouTube. Johnny Gargano had a feud with him where Johnny wasn't all like, hey, Nickelodeon reference, blah, blah, blah. He was more like, remember when Brian Pillman turned heel, like mid to late 92? Like, he wasn't quite loose cannony, but he was...
Yeah, he wasn't like Hollywood Blondes yet. He was just kind of like, fans can go to hell.
Johnny Gargano became that human being, only making fun of someone with half a hand.
Yeah.
Like, he would come out and do promos in a wheelchair, which he claimed he had stolen from, like, handicapped people, because he doesn't like them at all. And, like, he was going to beat up all the handicapped people of the world, and it was a really good feud. It was way less ha-ha than what I'm describing it as, but it was a really, really good feud. Like, it's totally, if you're not sold on Johnny Gargano because of his stuff in Dragon Gate and Evolve in terms of the whole, as Death Valley Driver, as those guys, the Phil Schneiders of the world would put it, the ironic wrestlers. Yeah, if you're not a fan of those guys, try sticking Johnny Gargano, Greg Iron's feud out, because it's really good stuff. Greatly.
Yeah, for the record, I don't even know if I said it to the listeners, Greg Iron basically has half of a hand. He, I guess, he still has his hand. He doesn't have, like, a hook or anything like that. He doesn't have a, you know, no hand at all. He just basically has it there, so, like, it's his right hand, too, I believe. So when he goes, you know, for these baby face fire comebacks and stuff like that, he's punching with his left hand, and... Obviously, it's unique because the guy has one hand, but it's cool. I can really get behind the guy like that, and I admire, like I said, I admire the hell out of him because, you know, it looks a little bit silly, too, in a way. You know, it basically has one hand just standing there the entire time while he's wrestling, you know what I mean? But the guy had a dream to be a wrestler, and he went through on it, so good for him. And he's a good wrestler. I thought he was perfectly fine in the ring, you know what I mean? I don't think he did anything too special. The match was against Tursus. You know, it was only a 5-minute squash, you know, for Tursus. But hey, I mean, I thought it was a fun match. And apparently, if I could go back here and look, I know on night, I believe it was the first night, he wrestled Lince Dorado, and I guess he took him to the limit. Obviously he ended up losing, but I guess he had a really good match too. So that's gonna be and he got a standing ovation. So I mean, obviously he must have did something right to get over where, you know, night three, people were, you know, standing up clapping for him. So good for him. I'm glad to see that he was doing well.
Yeah, it's always, I don't want to be like, oh, it's so good to see a handicapped guy.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, I'm not being like, oh, well, good for him, yeah. You know, he could do himself. Hey, the guy, he's a human being just like any other person, you know, so whatever. I thought he was good.
But yeah, I'll wait to see how, I know he's, the little I've seen him in the ring hasn't been like the best, obviously. Because I also don't want to judge him on the handicap scale, because, you know, it's not like he's walking out there in a wheelchair, which would be incredible if he walked out in a wheelchair, but anyway. but it's not like he only has one leg, or he has, like, half a head or something.
Yeah.
So it's not like he has a disability that's completely completing him from wrestling, like a Zach Gowen, for instance.
Yeah, he's my favorite handicapped wrestler, yeah. I'd say, over Zach Gowen.
Though it's funny that ever since Zach Gowen started, like, there's been an abundance of one-legged wrestlers on, like, really crappy shows, I guess. So I don't know what's up with that. But speaking of one-legged wrestlers, there were not any in this tag bout between 3.0 and the House of Truth. Was Truth Martini with them?
No, he wasn't. Truth Martini was not there this week, and it was just... I know Christian Abel's on night one, and I think they ended up doing something quack and jig on night two. I think Abercrombie was in for night two, or Josh Abercrombie, Josh Raymond, Josh Abercrombie, whatever you want to call him these days. Yeah, they wrestled 3.0, and 3.0, by the way, now have 3 points, so I guess they'll be gunning after Claudio and Aries on a future Chikara show for the titles. So that's going to be good, I think, you know, 3.0. I think they're very over. I mean, 3.0 are very over right now, and they're a team that I wouldn't really be too upset, like, if they were, like, the team to beat, end up beating Claudio and Aries, I guess, you know, down the line. I think, because they're not your, you know, Fire Ant and Soldier Ant. Like, I love the college. I love, you know, most of the guys on the Chikara roster, but I think it'd kind of be cool where these Chikara guys fighting for the right for, you know, Chikara, you know, standing up for Chikara, you know, at least gave the Brooder Shat the hard time, you know what I mean? So, we'll see what happens. I think, didn't the Smash Brothers have a match against the Brutus Chef too? I don't think I watched that show yet, but it's probably good.
I think they did. All I've been told is a bootleg version of the Incoherence match.
Yeah, and the Incoherence match, it kind of pissed me off after a while, because I get what it means, like, in the context of the match with the two count, but I guess it kind of just gets you angry more than it's like, oh, well, I understand this because it's part of the storyline, you know what I mean? It's kind of just, ugh. You know.
Which, speaking of that, let's bring this up now. Apparently there's a dude, I don't know if he was at Night 3, there's a dude named Wink that was apparently walking around giving out business cards.
Yeah, I didn't see him. He might have been there, but I didn't see him. I think I did see a picture of him on a message board, so I know.
Yeah, I know. I know for sure I got an IM after the first night with, like, pictures of him walking around, which I'm like, of all the things this storyline needs, another non-wrestler is not one of them.
Yeah. So, yeah, we'll see where it leads. I'm hoping that they build on it instead of, hey, there was a guy there, so you got to figure out what he was doing there and everything about it. Like, I kind of wish they would explain it a little bit more. But, you know, maybe they will. Maybe they'll make an extremely elaborate website, you know, describing why he was there. But we'll see.
Then it'll be like, it won't be Martin Stone. I was going to say Martin Stone, but he just got signed by WWE, so good for him.
Yeah, good for him. Yeah. Glad to hear that. And like I said before we go on to the next match, just real quick, that 3.0 House of Truth match, just your basic tag match, nothing too special, but 3.0 are really good, and I'm glad to hear that they're doing the tag. Yeah, they got their 3 points, and that they'll be eligible for a title shot. So, speaking of 3.0, they were also in the Countdown Showdown, which was, I guess, the Chikara's version of the Royal Rumble. It was 30 people every 30 seconds. They had someone enter. It was kind of good. They had, like, Wiggly doing, like, this 5-4-3-2-1. And I'm not really a huge Wiggly fan, but he was kind of funny doing it. So
Why wasn't Gavin doing it? Gavin,
I don't know. He was. Yeah. Well, I guess Gavin and Jacob. Yeah, right. That's right. That's his name, right? Jacob. Or is it Dieter?
Dieter's the dude that looks like
Jacob. Yeah, it's Jake. Yeah, Dieter's the guy that looks like Grizzly Redwood, or maybe even is Grizzly Wood for I know.
He looks more like Hannah Blandy or Leslie Butterscotch or whatever. He's not. Yeah, it's not him. But
it's not him. But it couldn't be Grizzly Redwood because he was in this match. But yeah, it was a really fun match. It was like it was your Chikara Royal Rumble, and it had like a lot of like little like storylines, you know, involved into it. Daniel, they had Brody Lee and Grizzly Redwood interact, and they had Grizzly Redwood actually eliminate Brody Lee, and I thought that was cool. They had Volkader come out, I guess, in continuation from last month at the Chikara RX, where Pinky Sanchez, so Volkader eliminated Pinky Sanchez. Actually, they eliminated each other over the top, and they fight outside or whatever. So it was pretty interesting how they had like all these different little storylines involved. They had Eddie Kingston eliminating, you know, Sarah Del Rey, Daisy Hayes, and then Claudio eliminated Eddie. So that it was kind of cool. They also had, as I'm just reading over the results here real quick, I think I believe I noticed someone was going to eliminate Equinox, who was Jimmy Olsen, and Colin Olsen actually came in the way and actually eliminated him to save Jimmy Olsen. So I'm wondering if they're going to eventually do an Olsen Twins reunion down the line. So that
in 18 months they'll make some YouTube video and then they'll be like, oh, that's the beginning of a storyline that took us a year and a half to tell.
Yeah, right. I mean, it was one of those little things where I noticed it just because I saw it. So I wonder if the commentators are going to make mention of it. But it came down to Claudio, Johnny Gargano, and 3.0. And let's see. And what had happened was 3.0 eliminated Claudio, I guess, to kind of build for their title match, you know, coming up maybe in the, you know, next month or whenever it is, whenever they're going to have it. And then from there, it was kind of like the WrestleMania 2 where Johnny Gargano kind of just eliminated 3.0. So it was a pretty interesting finish. Gargano got the win, so I wonder what they got in store for him. He didn't really have his, like, fist tights or anything like that, so it was kind of weird. He wasn't really representing fist. He was just Johnny Gargano, the whole shebang. So I'm interested in seeing what they're going to do. But, you know, like I said, Gargano I'm not a huge fan of. You had mentioned, you know, he does work in Pro Wrestling Ohio. I think he's a guy where either you're going to like him or you're not going to like him at this point. But I'm interested in finding out more about him here, you know, seeing him against some of the Chikara guys. So that's going to be pretty interesting.
And my question is, because I saw the time intervals on the Chikara website, like, the day before. I'm like, I'm a Royal Rumble snob. I need my intervals to be 2 minutes apart.
Exactly.
The 30-second intervals, did that, like, seem screwy, or...
The thing was, like, I didn't get my stopwatch out in timing, you know what I mean? But it felt like it made sense. I mean, you could tell, like, there was 30 seconds apart from each other, I mean, because they were constantly doing them.
Well, I mean, I didn't mean, like, they were working 30 seconds. I meant, like, did it seem, like, weird, or did it seem rushed that they were sending out guys every 30 seconds?
Oh, yeah, 30 seconds, man. I definitely think that being that there's only 7 matches on this show, and basically from that the Holik and Tozawa to House of Truth match, that was the first half of the show, then they did this in the main event in the second half. They definitely could have did at least a minute, if not, like, a minute and a half, if you want to go minute and a half. Like, I like my Royal Rumbles 2 minutes, I'm not going to lie. Maybe 60 minutes, you know, plus isn't going to be, you know, people want to sit around that long for whatever, but I don't know. I definitely would have did it maybe like a minute and a half, but this is something I'd love to see down. I'd love to see this as a yearly thing. I thought it was really cool. It was definitely cool to see like a Royal Rumble type match, like in an indie, because you don't see them too often. And unlike the Honor Rumbles that, you know, Ring of Honor does, whatever, this kind of made a little bit more sense, like in terms of storylines, kind of doing like little things and stuff like that. So I dug it.
Yeah. And hopefully it turns out well on DVD, because I am a huge fan of Royal Rumbles. I love them to death. And see, and like, even if you're worried about like time or whatever, I mean, 3.0 worked both that tag match and the Rumble.
Yeah.
So it's like you really could have gotten rid of a match.
Exactly.
And added 10 minutes to this, even if it was like a minute or 75 seconds.
Yeah.
That's a lot better than pretty
for
much 45
seconds. If you want to keep it like where it's under a minute, 45 seconds even. I mean, like, you know, I'm not going to get into a huge discussion on how long, you know, the friggin' interval should have been, but, like, it definitely should have been a little longer than 30 seconds, just to kind of give the room, you know, give the match a little, you know, space it out a little bit, you know, give it some time. So, but maybe it's something to learn from down the line. So, hey, the original Royal Rumble was only 20 people, so maybe they'll fix it.
I could have even been done, because, I mean, you have a little bit of wasted space in there, not a ton, but, I mean, the Steve Weiners of the world and the Jervis.
Yeah, Steve Weiner, I couldn't fucking care less about, but. Yeah, like, I'm even looking right now. Like, if you figure 45 seconds, you do, like, 45 seconds. I don't do the math. I can't do the math off the top of my head. But, you know, it kind of would have extended a little longer than 19 minutes and 50 seconds that this match ended up going. But, you know, whatever. It was fun, so. And real quick, before we get to the main event, too, just because you had mentioned, I hope it translates live, I just wanted to mention real quick, live, I think, you know, Chikara is definitely a show that, I mean, it's fun when you're there live. I think it's fun when you're watching on DVD, but I really think you need to be there live in order to really, you know, I guess to embrace Chikara and all of what it's trying to be, because it's definitely like a really great live event. Like we were saying, Gavin Loudspeaker, I think, does a great job. Jacob Hammermeyer, who is like the blonde guy, he's like the ring announcer for the BDK. People might just see him on the DVDs and just think, oh, there's that really annoying guy, whatever. He is so talented at just being like that ring announcer, like that snobby ring announcer before the show. He's like at the gimmick table, like shilling t-shirts. He's like running around the ring before, you know, before the show starts. Like, he's like the pregame entertainment, and I think he's awesome. Like I don't really know if he's a student, if he's going to ever be a wrestler, if he was just planning on being the, you know, a staff member, whatever. But that guy is great. And I think that, you know, Leonard Chikarasin, Bryce Rensburg, I think all those guys, besides being very, very nice, very friendly people, I mean, I really think that they do a great job with these, you know, these Chikara live events. And if you ever, you know, you're around Baltimore area, I guess New York City, where it's going to be coming up, it's definitely a definitely a show you should check out.
Yeah, that's what I've heard about this whole BDK storyline, because I'm not the biggest on it.
I've
a couple matches. Oh, go ahead.
I'm sorry for talking over you there. But no, but before you finish, I just have a question just because it's in my mind right now. Being that you just watch them on DVD, you don't go to live events. Like, do you kind of maybe see Chikara differently than maybe someone like me does, where I do go to live events? You know, do you kind of maybe notice like a little bit of a difference in enthusiasm, I guess, for this promotion?
Absolutely, positively. The enthusiasm for Chikara from the people that don't go to shows has seemingly taken a nosedive since the BDK thing.
Yeah.
Like, I noticed it got a real fever pitch around the last season finale, and then once the DVDs came out, where every single match seemingly was BDK versus Chikara, it's like, you really don't hear a lot of talk. Like, even like 2 or 3 years ago, when Chikara was really, really, really hot, and they were just starting to take off and do other markets and such, you'd see multi-page threads and message board, like, just reviewing one Chikara show, whereas...
Oh, yeah, exactly.
Now the CCW fans folder, for instance, the Chikara deal, it's struggling to get to 40 pages with, like, 8 months in, so...
Yeah. I just think maybe it's just not, you know... I don't know, I'm trying to stay away from message boards a lot these days, so I don't really know too much what was in the that thread, but I think that, I definitely think it's a promotion where you got to go out and see it, and if you're not, you know, it's just something you're just not gonna. I don't want to say, well, if you don't go to the live events, you're not gonna get Chikara, blah blah blah. I'm not trying to sound that snobby or anything like that. I don't know how this is coming off, but I definitely think it's definitely a promotion that it enhances your enjoyment of it if you've been there live at least once or twice and know kind of what it's like. It's a lot of fun.
I will say that Jacob translates a lot more to DVD than what you'd think. Like, I first noticed him, there was that show they ran, that building that looks just like the staircase.
In Pittston, yeah. Not the staircase in Pittston. I think it was the Goodfellas in Pottsville for one of the February shows.
Yeah, but, like, there was a BDK match where during the near falls, you can see Jacob on the stage in the background. And, like, you can, like, in a spot that nobody should be able to see him, so it's not like he really had a reason to be acting it up and hamming it up.
Yeah.
But he was going nuts for all the near falls.
Oh, yeah. I was watching...
Wow, dedication. I love it.
Yeah, I was just watching, we'll get to the main event in a minute. I was just watching the anniversary, the Elf from Ace Arena. And I think it was, like, what was it, Lince versus Fire Ant, I think it was. And I was watching Jacob the entire time, because he was just so, like, his... Like, how he was acting and stuff like that. I think the guy's awesome. I had to go rewatch it just so I could watch the match, because I wasn't even watching the in-ring. I think he's awesome. I think there's a lot, you know. I definitely think he's really talented, so he's definitely a plus in Chikara Land. And speaking of plus in Chikara Land, your 2009 Wrestling Observer Rookie of the Year is also your Young Lions Cup 8 tournament champion, as Frightmare beat Lince Dorado. They had about a 15-minute match. Really fun match, real good match, and they didn't do the everyone goes around the ring and pounds on the mat and cheers for, you know, the heel or the face, whatever, like that. It was just one-on-one, and then, like, after, you know, Frightmare won, they kind of, you know, the entire locker room came out. It was really cool. It was a nice touch, but what ended up happening was Sabato got taken out, and everyone turns around and looks at Bryce, who was with Leonard Chikarson at the commentation station there. And Bryce runs out, jumps off the stage, gets in the ring, and I think he counted the three. I don't know if he didn't count the three, and then Frightmare did another move and then pinned him. But regardless, it was Bryce ended up getting the pin, so that was kind of cool, because I think when they did that back in May, and Bryce was like, "Well, I'm not the referee, I can't do it." Do you remember that? He was kind of just like sitting there, you know what I mean? It was kind of weird, whatever. This time he actually did get up. He actually did go make the three. So it was a really good ending. Like I said, the entire locker room came out, and everyone cheered for Frightmare, and that was it. You know, I think Frightmare is insanely talented. I think he's a guy, obviously, you know, 5'4", 5'5". He's not a really tall guy. He doesn't really seem like he's going to be, you know, anything besides just your Chikara flippy, you know, guy, whatever like that, but he does it so well that it doesn't really matter that he can't be any other type of wrestler. I think he's great at what he does. And the fact that this guy, like I said, the fact that Frightmare is basically a student, he's not, you know, anyone else that I don't know who he is or whatever. The fact that he's a student, he's young, and he's in the business, you know, and he's doing this good at how he is right now. I mean, like, there is no, like, this show really gave me full promise, like, on all the great talent, you know, that there still is out there, and, you know, maybe that you might not know of, like Chizawa, like, you know, Mike Seidel, Greg Iron, Frightmare, all these guys. Just, it was a really fun show, and I'm kind of upset Kyle O'Reilly wasn't on the show. I'm kind of upset Adam Cole wasn't on the show, but I guess that's an incentive to go out and get night two, I guess. So it was a fun show.
Yeah, and I mean, there really was no reason for Adam Cole to not be on the show, considering.
Yeah.
I assume he doesn't live that far from the arena.
No, he doesn't live that far away at all. So that's what he said. I don't know why they didn't really have him on, but that's what they had in the book. So, you know, whatever. I never understood that. I never understood having wrestlers at your show and, like, not having them wrestle. You know what I mean? I know, like, maybe wrestlers are injured, or maybe... Because Rich Swann was there. And, like, I'm thinking, like, why the hell is Rich Swann here? And he's not doing anything, unless, like, Rich Swann's injured, or he just wanted us to chill out and watch the match. But you would think, like, go out and have a 5-minute match, you know, against whoever like that. Like, Rich Swann is great. Like, I love Rich Swann. Why is he sitting behind me? Why isn't he in the ring, you know? So, whatever. Shout out to Rich Swann. He's got plenty of chances to do good, I guess, in the future. That guy's going to be great. But that's your Young Lions Cup 8 review. Hopefully it didn't, you know, ramble on too much, but there you go.
No, though we went about 16 minutes past before we were going to. Whatever. You know, that's the beauty of taped radio.
I talk a lot. Sorry.
But, yeah, before we go, we just figured we'd spend a little bit of time alerting you as to what we've been up to lately, not in terms of everything, because I'm not going to tell you about the woes of work, for instance. But
I want to hear about your move, because I know moving's always fun.
Moving was so much easier than, like, it really should have been. Like,
yeah.
I remember last Thursday, I called the landlord, and I was like, hey, can I come in a little bit early? Or how early could we get in to moving stuff in Saturday morning? She's like, oh, well, if you come at 5:01 p.m., we'll just let you have the key, you pay, you know, the prorated rent, and we'll let you in, you can start moving. Like, wow, awesome. So we got, like, half of it done Friday night, and then Saturday.
Oh, that's perfect.
And then Saturday, when we had everybody here to help move, it took 20 minutes.
Yeah.
Like,
was it hot?
Not really, because it was raining. Like, the whole, which sucked because we had the bed in my dad's pickup truck. So, and he decided to take the tarps off before we left for some reason. And then my friend Todd shows up, like, right after my dad takes off the truck, and unbeknownst to us, his truck was it was pretty much like a U-Haul type deal. So it had a roof to it. So we just could have thrown the bed in there. And
got
we had
it.
Plenty of room, and all we threw in there was the couch. No, the place is, like, shockingly nice. Only issue I've had has been with Comcast, because they screwed us over royally. They promised us one cable package for a certain price, and we got a package right underneath, but I can't really afford a whole lot more than what we got, so I can't complain too much in terms of that. But we do get, tying this back around to wrestling and sports entertainment and such, I do get HDNet here, and it is phenomenal. Like, it is my new favorite channel. I love it to death.
Yeah.
Like, for MMA fans, like, seriously, I've DVR'd so much MMA in the past, like week. It's ridiculous. Like, I'm watching the Blast and Goku show, which this match that's on right now is amazing. These guys are killing each other. And, I mean, Ring of Honor, I've never really gotten to see a full episode in HD. It makes the show so much better. I don't know what it is about watching a show on a computer or watching a show in HD on TV, but it makes it so much better. Like,
it makes the world a difference. I think high definition just makes anything better.
It does. Though I will say now, and people, if people even care to disagree with me, you will complain. The Ring of Honor show in HD, I think, looks better than Raw in HD because
I agree.
All pixely and stuff.
Yeah. That's why.
Yeah. Well, SmackDown looks phenomenal. I was almost sad I wasn't watching SmackDown on Friday because I was flipping back and forth between that and Inside MMA because I'd forgotten the DVR SmackDown. And yeah, it looks beautiful in HD. So, but yeah, it's such a good deal. Though I found it funny that right as Rasheed Brown's promo was airing on HDNet, I click on something online. Oh, Rasheed Brown just quit. Rashi Brown or whatever.
Yeah. What happened there?
Yeah, it's concussions and, I forgot to set my clock for the wrong time. pretty much it amounts to he's Adam Pearce's boy. And
yeah.
Adam Pearce is out, so whatever.
I'm not too upset about it, actually. Like, I think I said it on MS Sports. I'm like, I liked him when he was, like, the, you know, like, squashing guys. Obviously, you can't squash guys forever. You got to have a good match eventually. But I think that the way that they did it, I didn't really agree with. Do you remember when Monty Brown was, like, in TNA, like, when he first started in TNA, was, like, on Impact, like, on Fox Sports, whatever, like that? And he just kind of was squashing people for a couple months. And I think, didn't they have him, like, have a match against Jeff Jarrett? And he, like, took Jeff Jarrett to the limit or something like that?
Yeah,
I think
they did, like, a non-title match, and he took him to a 10-minute time limit.
Yeah.
They had the Fox box. And, yeah, all that fun stuff. Which reminds me, huge, awesome DVD coming out in 2 weeks that I'm so going to get if I can afford it, because our money's really tight right now. But Best of the Asylum Years.
Oh, yeah. I was wondering when that came out.
Yeah, it comes out September
6th. Very nice.
I am very excited about that. Because apparently it's only going to be like $10 at FYE, so...
Oh, yeah.
For two discs of that era, hell yeah.
Yeah, I think I'd mention it too. The I was just at FYE the other day because they had a buy one, get one sale for our next subject that we'll be talking about in a minute, which I picked up. But I did see that they did have the Motor Spoon Machine Guns Beer Money like two-pack for $10. So you figure if you'd ever saw that, even if you just get it for the Shelly Sabin match, I mean, it's probably worth it, let alone... You know, all the other good stuff on there, so it's probably...
There's plenty of... I mean, it's not a waste of $10, let's just say.
No, for, yeah, I'm sure.
But what we were going to talk about, which Mike just mentioned, we both have that Raw Season 1, Season 2 compilation, which I don't know if it's the weirdest DVD they put out, because it really comes off like someone with that Crazy Max with a really, really nice...
might be one of my favorite... The DVDs that WWE has put out, you know what I mean? Just because it's not a cookie cutter DVD, you know what I mean? Like, here's Ric Flair, and here's all of Ric Flair's greatest matches. I mean, Lex Luger versus Jason is on this match, is on this DVD, you know? It's a really well, you know, I think it's really well put together because mostly everybody that was in WWF in 93, and I didn't watch 94 yet, but I browsed through most of 93 so far. They're kind of in it in one way or another, you know what I mean?
Yeah, like they it's a great representation of the time without throwing every single match in there. Like you get an emphasis of who was important, who wasn't, who was just kind of there, so on and so forth. I mean the one revelation. I mean, it really shouldn't be a revelation because everyone kind of knew it, but it's really been almost a secret since then. Matt Bourne as Doink was phenomenal.
Awesome, man. Oh my god. Like, I think we need to do a show of just Doink the Clown, because I was telling my buddy Tom, who was over here on set, we were watching it, how great is Doink the Clown? I mean, Doink the Clown, I guess, when, you know, most people know of, is awful. You know, I mean, he was not that good. He was the happy, you know, happy clown, whatever. Doink as just this heel clown being an absolute prick with that awesome music, and, like, plus the fact that he was a great worker on top of everything else. You know what I mean?
I love the idea of him not necessarily being like a ha-ha clown, but rather here's this dude who screwed up in the head, who knows that he screwed up in the head and knows how to take advantage of it, but he's also like this mastermind technician, you know?
Yeah.
And he gets you thinking one thing, and then all of a sudden he's stretching you in all these different holds. I mean, there's a match on there with Doink and I think Kamala.
Yeah, Kamala.
Where he puts him in the stretch plum. I'm like, whoa, All Japan women represent up in here.
Exactly. I'm telling you, man, I know on Crazy Max a while ago, this was years ago when I used to still go on Crazy Max. I'll have to actually head back on there to see if someone has it. But I know someone put out like a heel Doink like comp. It's like three discs of like, because on this DVD is a Mr. Perfect versus Doink match. But if you remember, I believe Mr. Perfect and Doink had like two previous King of the Ring qualifying matches.
Yeah, they
both
gone to
double
counts or double DQ.
Yeah, and they're I think they did one on Challenge. I think they did one on Superstars. Like, and they were both like time limit draws or something like that or whatever, count out or something like that. So I think they had like I don't know if it was no time limit or whatever like that. I think it was like one fall to a finish. So it's definitely cool that they added that on there. Like, I was really, really happy that they did. And Marty Jannetty, I think they did a match with Marty Jannetty too. I think Doink had a couple matches with them that ended in a 2 out of 3 falls match. And the 2 out of 3 falls match.
Yeah, that match is awesome.
Yeah. People, like, I mean, I'm telling you, if you don't know, if you think that Doink the Clown was just like a goofball, if he was just, you know, the Ray Apollo or whatever the guy's name was. He used to be Matt Bourne, and Heel Doink used to be friggin' great.
Well,
so.
It's weird because Matt Bourne gets, like, all the credit for the Heel Doink deal. And I remember he was around for the first couple months of the babyface Doink because he did this really long interview with, I think, Mike Johnson of PW Insider, where he said he was around until, like, Survivor Series in 93,
yeah,
which is after the babyface turn.
That was when, yeah, because Doink turned face, like, when he turned on, I think it was, like, Bam Bam Bigelow, remember that?
Yeah, he threw a bucket of water on him, which, by the way, yeah. they don't even, like, allude to on the DVD.
Poor Luna Vachon.
I'm on these, halfway through the second disc, which is, like, the fall of 93 or whatever.
Yeah.
And he just comes out as a babyface in, like, one of the segments. It's, like, Marty Doink and then some other deal, and then all of a sudden Doink's babyface, and he's faking out Bobby Heenan with the water bucket.
Yeah. Yeah, that was just kind of it from there. And then I think they gave him... Did they give him Dink's one after? Maybe not. I don't know.
I know around 93. Around that time, because it was...
They had to, because 94 was WrestleMania 4, so, and he was on that.
WrestleMania 10, rather, because WrestleMania...
Yeah, WrestleMania 10,
awesome.
Yeah.
Doink was at WrestleMania 4. But, no, because Tiger Jackson, who played Dink, was actually originally supposed to be the Little Hulkster, and then he ended up as the Macho Midget, which he shows up on disc 2. They did a deal where Randy Savage got mad at Doink's trickery with the multiple Doinks and such. And he helped Marty win the 2 out of 3 falls match because they had pulled the double Doink, and then Macho Man, like, beats up the first Doink, and then he pulls the second Doink out from under the ring, and he's like, see, ref, there's two Doinks. Because the referee legitimately thought that he was reapplying makeup or something. I don't know. But so then they did Macho Man and Doink the next week, and Doink goes under the ring. There's not a second Doink there. There's a midget Macho Man, which one of the underrated calls of all time. Bobby Heenan sees the midget come out from under the ring. He's like, that's not Savage, that's a midget, which really doesn't sound funny, but Bobby Heenan doing it is phenomenal.
Yeah, oh yeah, I bet.
But no, somehow within 3 or 4 weeks, the Macho Midget ends up being Dink. So, because I remember they did the Macho Midget for a few weeks because there's a Coliseum video match,
yeah,
with Little Louie, who was one, he was the fat midget on Jerry Lawler's team.
Yeah.
Survivor Series. Little Louie.
And it was him and the Beverly Brothers, right?
Yeah, against the Bushwhackers and Macho Midget.
Yeah.
Which I thought was awesome. Because the previous week they had done Tiger Jackson and the Bushwhackers against the Beverly Brothers. And,
yeah.
So.
The reason I know that, I had that VHS tape was when he was Tiger Jackson.
Yeah, which, by the way, scared me so much when I was little. Tiger Jackson scares me.
Oh yeah, when he did, like, the Bushwhackers, like the thing, like, under the rope and, like, made this face, man, I was scared. But I think Dink, that had to be, like, around Christmas, because didn't Doink get Dink for Christmas or something like that? And I think that's
it sounds familiar. Like, he got him as a present.
Yeah, so that's probably.
By the way, like, even as, like, a 20-something-year-old now, I was, like, really sad when Doink gave Kamala the present and there was nothing inside of it.
Yeah.
Like, I got, like, legitimately sad. I felt...
poor guy.
Yeah, like, I'm only a disc and a half in, and, like, my friend Nick Manoa, like, I'm name-dropping him, but he told me that, like, it gets worse as it goes on, which I'm really... Thanks, Nick, for setting me up for that.
Yeah. Well,
I'm,
you know,
really
what, like, there's a lot of crap in between the good. Like, hey, like, I love all of 94 WWF, I love all of 95 WWF, and even 93 to that matter, but I know it's really not, like, if you go and look back on it today, it's not the greatest, but I was a kid back then, so seeing this stuff, some of it for the first time since, you know, in 16 years, it's pretty interesting. So I definitely think there's a lot of good left to talk about, but if you haven't picked up the Rod DVD yet, I definitely recommend it. It's definitely a good pickup.
And the Manhattan Center, man, that was an awesome building to run wrestling in.
Oh,
that was
great.
Proto ECW crowd. I mean...
Yeah. Let's talk about that.
Yeah, because, I mean, the second or third chapter, not maybe not even that soon, but it was when Hogan came back and did that promo. And the camera pans around from Vince to the entrance where Hogan comes out. And there's, like, two or three, like, negative Hogan signs. There's one straight up that says Hulk Homo, which cracked me up. But, no, this crowd was awesome because, I mean, they knew their stuff, and they were the proto-ECW crowd.
Yeah, they were a smart crowd.
I didn't even see Mike Johnson running in and out through the stairs in the crowd.
Yeah, I wasn't sure. Like, I was like, was the Manhattan Center 93 a smart crowd? And then I saw for the Lex Luger match, someone guy had a really big total package sign. So obviously people, you know, knew Lex Luger. And actually they were cheering for Lex Luger when he was the narcissist and he was, you know, the heel. he was getting a pretty big face reaction, you know what I mean? So that was a really fun crowd. I think the only downfall of that building is, and I think it's on the second floor, so if you got to carry the ring, you basically got to carry the ring up the steps or something like that. So I guess it's a little hard setting up, I guess, and taking down. But, you know, Ring of Honor still goes there, and I'm glad they do, because I, as much as I kind of don't like the New York crowd sometimes, I do like how that, you know, the building looks on, you know, for Ring of Honor DVDs. So I'm glad it's still being used in a way.
Which, by the way, big ups to Ring of Honor. They apparently sold the building out, so good
yeah,
for them.
Yeah, hey, good for them. I didn't know that. I was going to ask.
Yeah, they just, like, yeah, announced about an hour ago that they sold it out. So yeah, that's
I'm glad
awesome
to hear that. Yeah, 9/11 is going to be a great day in New York City.
That just sounds awkward. But hey, it's going to be a great day in Bellevue, Illinois, too, because Ian Rotten's running another deathmatch show. But before we go, just wanted to, is there anything else you've watched recently? Because I wanted to close off with the book I've been reading. But
what did I watch recently? I watched Dio. I really don't want to talk about it. It was a good show, you know. I mean, Dio is a good show. All PWG shows are good, so I'm really not missing anything there. And there's something else I just watched, but I'm sure we'll just save it for the next show. So go ahead, buddy.
I was gonna ask real quick, since you mentioned, you know, PWG Dio. It's a good show, but it's all the PWG shows are good. I was wanting to ask real quick, because I called it about a year ago when the PWG stuff was really hot. Every DVD, there'd be like four or five matches everyone would be, you know, oh my god about. Has it gotten to the point where every show is like so good and the crowds are hot for every show that they're all just kind of blended together? Or
yeah, I could see that in a way, because I actually had a hard time thinking what was on Asdorm Turns and what was on Titanica. Because Dio definitely felt like a B show, because there was a lot of the, you know, the younger guys that they have and stuff like that, and with the, you know, the big, you know, the Dream Partner main event, whatever it was, you know what I mean, they're the old tag team partners against one another. But I think that, I think if anything, and I know a lot of people are going to disagree with this, they got to move away from that building. And it's not because it's not a good building. I love that building. I think it's great. I think the atmosphere is great in it. But if you're getting to the point where you're turning people down, you know what I mean, or you're turning fans away, you know, as great as the atmosphere is, I think you got to think about what's best for your business and what's best for, you know, getting more fans in the door and putting more money in your pocket than you are, oh, well, the building looks really nice, you know what I mean? I definitely think that, you know, I'm sure there's other buildings that they could, you know, run that maybe look similar that, you know, also serve alcohol. So it's not like that's the only building in the world that, you know, can do it. But if anything, I would maybe say that these shows have gotten to be so good to the point where I think they outgrew the building that they're in, and it's gotten to the point where as nice as it is that they still run there, it's, I don't know, it's maybe not the smartest thing business-wise, you know?
Yeah, it's, I mean, the building's awesome, but like you said, if they're turning people away...
Yeah, didn't they turn down...
Yeah, they turned away, like, the reports have said everything from, like, 20 to 200, so yeah, who knows. But
even if you turn down 10 people, like, that's 10 tickets that you're not selling. You
yeah,
know what
it's
mean?
$150.
Yeah.
If it's $15 a ticket, then...
Yeah.
But there's a double-edged sword there where if the product dies down because all of a sudden hot crowds aren't there...
Exactly,
or, yeah. And then the attendance dies down again, then you got to go back to that building, and it's just ping-pong game.
Yeah.
But
maybe run there some days, and you know what I mean? Like, and other shows run there, other, you know what I mean, run somewhere maybe elsewhere. It's maybe a little bigger, so.
Yeah.
You know, something to look forward to. Hey, I mean, it's a nice problem to have, you know what I mean? It's a nice problem to have when you're turning people away, so obviously you're doing something right.
Good for them, since, you know, it's not like a ton of other indies are getting to say that these days.
Yeah, and it's too bad. I didn't want to, I forgot to say it for the Chikara show. I'd say maybe about, like, 150 people there. It was a really, really great place. It was like they did serve alcohol there too. So this could maybe possibly be down the line in beautiful Reading, Pennsylvania. Could be the Rosita other world there. But like it was a really fun place. So I like the look of that building a lot that Chikara ran. So it reminded me a little bit of the PWG venue. So maybe that's obviously not everyone's gonna be getting drunk on the Chikara shows, but you know, maybe some other promotion can run there or something like that.
And speaking of promotions and promoters in attendance, last thing I wanted to bring up,
yeah,
I've been reading Howard Brody. He's the former NWA Florida promoter, former president of the National Wrestling Alliance during its dying days. He wrote a book called Swimming with Piranhas, and I heard things about it for a while, never really seen it in the bookstore. Came across it a couple weeks ago, and I've been reading it, mostly today. I've gotten through the bulk of the book today. I still got like 50 pages or so to get through. I love this book. It's pretty much, it's the story of a guy who failed and failed and failed and failed at wrestling. Somehow failed upwards a bit, but then he lost all of his money, lost his wife, lost most of his friendships to wrestling. It's the story of the 10% of, okay, it's like 90% of wrestling personalities, wrestlers, promoters, valets, so on and so forth, they don't get beyond a certain point, if they even get to that point. And then the 10% that do get beyond it become superstars, and they're the ones who are writing 90% of these books these days. Howard Brody's book is the one book I found about a failure in wrestling. And he doesn't like make excuses about it, which I love. It's not a book like most wrestlers where if they screw something up, oh, it's because of somebody else. Or it's because the sun didn't shine right that day. He will take credit for every downfall. And it's not like it's a story about just some guy that ran some indie shows and then cried wolf and went home. This dude did everything. He wrote for the WWF magazine in the mid-80s, and then he got screwed out of that job by some dude. But he fesses up that he would have given the job to that guy because he was a much more experienced writer. He promoted when all those women's feds popped up in the late 80s. All those Wait, David McLean.
Hold on. What was it? Was it Keith Elliott Greenberg?
No, unfortunately not, though. I think that guy got name dropped. I think it's awesome that he has a jobber likeness of himself on those Raw DVDs, Russ Greenberg.
Right. Yeah.
But but no, and then when all those like TNA, not TNA, but T&A feds of the late 80s, the POWs and the GLOWs and so forth came about, he had his hands in one that he ran in Florida for like two or three shows. And there's actually a big chunk of the book is about Luna Vachon, and it kind of falls into the whole thing that everyone's kind of pointing out to with her death, which is rather unfortunate, about her bipolar disorder and about how when she was on her good times, man, she was a pleasure to be around. But when Luna came out, man, there's a story in the book about how when this promotion died, and Luna was working in their office, she was the booker, and she helped them do a lot of things. She wasn't just a wrestler for them, let's just say. And she was in the office the day that they got the word that the rug was being yanked, the money was being pulled out, and they pulled them, the two guys that were working there besides Luna, Howard Brody and his friend, I forget his name, but they came, the guy pulled Howard aside, he's like, hey, we can't do this anymore, the investors pulled out, or whatever the story was, and Luna, Howard's like, I'm going to pay Luna for the next 2 weeks or whatever, just, we have that much money. I'm going to make sure she gets through the holidays, make sure she has Christmas presents for her kids. Luna was right around the corner, didn't hear that part of it, and came around and became Luna. She turned from Angel, who that's what everyone in the wrestling business, according to Howard and a couple other places, that's what they called nice Luna. They called her Angel. And then she came around the corner, and out came Luna. And she was yelling and screaming, and she's like, I should have brought Vaseline so it wouldn't hurt so much when y'all fucked me. And that's the line apparently she used. And then like 2 hours later, I guess Howard tried to get a hold of her and try to clear things up. And he's like, listen, here's the check for the next 2 weeks. I just want to make sure. And before he could finish his sentence, she starts crying. And she's like, thank you so much. My kids can have Christmas now. And so there was really a two sides to her story that really gets told in this book, which I loved. But no, it wasn't. He did the women's thing, and they did this thing called Ring Warriors, which some of the stuff is circulated online. Pretty much, him and Hiro Matsuda got the rights to a bunch of New Japan footage to air in English form, and they got deals on like French channels and German channels, and like I think it was Craig DeGeorge, who was like pretty much the prototype for the Todd Pettengill, Michael Cole type announcer. Yeah. Him and Sir Oliver Humperdinck did voiceovers on these New Japan tapes, and then they brought in Gordon Soley later and so on and so forth. And, I mean, they were riding high on the hog. They were doing well enough. They got WWF canceled off of European TV for a while, I guess. And then all of a sudden, one day, money wasn't there. New Japan pulls out because WCW doesn't want them involved. And that happens. And then Howard gets in with the NWA, and then he pretty much kills the NWA from within. And he'll admit to it, not because he wanted to, but just because of corrupt promoters. And if you're one of those people that loves the corrupt promoter DOI type stories, there's plenty of them in here. There's a chapter about Dennis Coraluzzo. man, there's that guy was a riot and a half.
Oh yeah.
But yeah, I'm just there's so many. It's more of a book, not necessarily that's a great narrative altogether, because there's a million much better written books. I really wish he would have gotten a better proofreader. But in terms of a bunch of little stories coming together to become like one big story, I guess, like none of them really tied together. There's a lot of holes in his, like, not necessarily holes in terms of logic, but in terms of how did you get from this point to this point, which really a proofreader should have gotten on. But I loved all the little stories, so to speak. He's one of those type of guys, like, you know how all wrestlers have at least one story for every predicament. You know, they're stuck in the elevator, like, man, remember that time when me and Don Morocco got locked in the so-and-so? Yeah. Like those, yeah. He's got a million of those stories. They're all interesting. And it's from a different perspective, because he wasn't a guy that was, you know, came in up through the territories, or he had a rough go in training or whatever. He was a fan that got in through the back door. And it's a really awesome story. So go out, get it, any means necessary. I don't even know if they still have it in stores anymore, because I know it sold horribly. So, but if you can...
It's on High Spots. I just looked it up right now, and I know that High Spots is selling it.
Well, then go to highspots.com, get it, take advantage of highspots.com, because I know a lot of wrestlers have, but that's beside the point. And go do that. So with that, with my rant about Howard Brody's awesome book, Swimming with Piranhas, which you can get on highspots.com. Is there anything else you want to touch today, Mike?
I don't know if I don't want to go into it too much, but obviously today we lost J.C. Bailey passed away over the weekend. Luna Vachon brought up. So it's definitely a weird couple of days, I guess, if you're a wrestling fan. I know, like, well, you know, all these wrestlers are dead. It's nothing really new, but still, if you really just stop and think about it, it does kind of suck, you know, that all these guys are dying. Really sad about Bailey's death. I think we all kind of knew. I don't want to say we all kind of knew he was going to die, and then whatever, and then he did. But it's one of those things where you knew he was kind of he was driving up the wrong road, and sooner or later, you know, he hit that wall. And I don't know how he died. I don't think really anyone really does at this point, or if they do, they're, you know, not really saying it. But it's too bad. It's just a shame. So I'm about to go watch J.C. Bailey versus Necro Butcher. It was like a no-rope barbed wire match that they had in CZW. I don't even know if they had multiple ones, but I know they had one of them at one point in time. This was like when Necro was hot. You know what I mean? It was really just, you know, the biggest thing in the indies. So I had that ready to go.
Yeah, and I mean, JC, everyone knew he had his problems. Everyone knew he did things that weren't exactly keeping his nose clean. I don't want to name drop anybody, but I'm friends with a couple people that knew JC. Never heard anyone say J.C. Bailey's a dick. It's always J.C. Bailey, it's a shame that he's doing what he's doing.
Yeah, so, I know a lot of people like that. You know what I mean? I know a lot of people that they're good-hearted people, but, I mean, they have their demons and, you know, they have what they have. You know what I mean? They're an addict. They're hooked on something or whatever like that, you know, and you can only hope that, you know, they're the ones that are going to change their mind, but sometimes, you know, that doesn't really work out, so...
It's a shame, and I hate to leave it on a dour note, but I mean...
Yeah, not to leave it on a dour note.
Yeah, but we'll be out next week sometime. We're good to go for shows after this. We're moved in. That's Mike. I'm Tom. And
we'll talk to you next time.
Moms, don't let your kids become wrestlers.